I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Pixels for the month of October 2020. I'm Patrick Beja, and we're going to go over all of the important pieces of news of things that happened in the world of gaming for the month. Before we do, though, I do have one request. My PlayStation 5 pre-order was cancelled, as it has been for many people. So if by any chance you live in America, I think for Europe, it's not necessary, but if you live in America and you have an extra pre-order of the PlayStation 5 that you don't need, and you might be willing to sell it to me and send it to me the day it comes out, please get in touch. I'm Patrick at FrenchSpin.com. I'm serious. It's coming out a week before for you guys. So if you have one that you don't need, I will be willing to buy it from you and, of course, pay for transportation and everything. So, yeah, PlayStation. I'm probably not the only person saying this. But, you know, if you've been a listener for a while and you have that available, I'm interested. So, all right. There was a lot of things that happened in October. I'm going to go over mostly in chronological order, but if we talk about one topic, I'm going to gather everything from that topic in one conversation. And the first thing that I should talk about is Blizzard Entertainment closing down the offices for the company in Versailles in France. And those are the European headquarters for the company. And most of the roles are being transferred to the UK at Activision Blizzard King offices. And I had a lot to say about this. As you can imagine, I'm a former employee of Blizzard at that specific office. And I talked about it a lot in basically everywhere. And I feel like I shouldn't go into all of the details, but I will break it down to you as not what it means for social reasons or companies or capitalism, but what it means, in my opinion, for Blizzard and what we can infer from that latest move. There are actually two things that I take into account. The first one is the announcement of Mike Morhaime's new company that is going to be publishing video games. Mike Morhaime, of course, the main founder of Blizzard Entertainment, left the company 2 years ago, and after what really smells like a non-compete agreement, he is coming back into the world of video games with statements that are pretty much saying that he left because he didn't like the way Activision was starting to butt in and wanted things to be run, which is pretty telling. And if you have been following me, I really like to look at things in a very objective manner. And I feel like until now, we had a lot of speculation about the influence that Activision is exerting over the way Blizzard does things. And this is the first actual, real, neutrally analyzable thing that we get. So this is the first point. Mike Morhaime is actually saying Activision is butting in. And the second thing is, with Blizzard Versailles and the European HQ being closed down, it means that a lot of these roles are going to be taken over by employees of Activision Blizzard King, which I can expect will do things in a different way. Now, the development team is still very much staying in Irvine in a Blizzard office, and it seems like they're kind of becoming a studio of Activision Blizzard King instead of its fully independent company. And that independence was something that was very much valued by Blizzard as a company. They loved doing things completely on their own, having the mastery of everything that was going into the way they did, you know, anything. It was the games, of course, but also like merchandising and marketing and PR and all of that. And now marketing and PR are most likely going to be taken over by Activision employees who might not do things in the exact same way. Basically, at Blizzard, the product people had an unusual amount of power. Usually, I would say that the marketing people have a lot of power. Like, a game that should come out at a certain time is going to come out at that time, unless the marketing people, when I say marketing people, it's essentially the, you know, CEOs, but they lean towards marketing in most companies, I feel like. Not just in gaming, but in most things. At Blizzard and a few other companies, things are really in the hands of the developers. And they have, like, an amount of veto power that is, I think, unlike any other company. They oversee everything, including merchandising, publishing, marketing. Like, most of my friends who came to work to Blizzard from other gaming companies, they're telling me, dude, that is not how it works outside of, you know, in other companies. Like, they give you the product, and of course they have a lot of say into how things are done, but then you go ahead and do your marketing plan and do your PR outreach programs. You don't have to refer back to the dev to get everything approved every single day, essentially. It's a little bit of a caricature, but not so much. So basically, that is going to change, I feel, with the way the new organization is going to work, because the marketing people are going to be used to a different way of doing things from Blizzard. So there might be a little bit of a clash between the dev teams and the support teams in the way things are done. Now, those are relatively, I don't know, you know, they're not minor, but they're not affecting the games yet. And I think, maybe I'm being a little bit positive, but I really think I'm being objective. I want to wait until I see what the games are, because the other element in that equation is, of course, the assumption is Activision is butting in and the games are going to be crap. They're not going to be polished anymore. And we've had a couple of examples where things were uncertain. Certainly for Warcraft 3 Reforged, it was released in a state that is not up to the standard of Blizzard. But in my opinion, it was a smaller title. But we haven't seen major games, major sequels for years now. You know, Overwatch came out in 2016. And we haven't seen a major sequel or new title since then, and we might not even see one in 2021. It's 4 to 5 years without a game, which is not exactly what you would expect from a company like Activision. If you if you assign evil intent to them of making easy money, they would put out games. Like, even Diablo Immortal has been pushed, it seems, because it wasn't ready. The mobile game, which is, according to the popular belief, the easy way of making lots of money, because you're going to put out a mobile game and the Asian market is going to rush to it and have lots of microtransactions, and that's going to be easy money. Well, it was announced over 2 years ago, and we still haven't seen anything that could tell us that it's coming out. There's a dichotomy here. Yes, definitely Activision is exerting more influence over Blizzard. That is, I think, pretty much a fact now. They're not yet, at least, pushing them to put out games before they're ready. And 5 years without a major game, that is a lot of time. So obviously, there's a business decision being made here with closing down the Activision, the Blizzard offices in Versailles. And it sucks for the people who work there. And I, you know, feel that probably more than most people commenting on this, because they're many of my friends and people I worked with. I worked in PR there for 5 years, from 2009 to 2014. So it's been a while, but still. I do have to say, though, the French law is different from what you would have in the US. It's very likely they're going to have a very significant severance package, and then they're going to have a couple of years of unemployment benefits, and they still get, you know, healthcare and free education and all of that. So I'm not saying it's fun to be fired, to lose your job. Obviously, it's not. But you can't look at it in the same way that you would in the US, where, you know, things are crazy and you don't get the most basic social safety nets. So that's another thing to keep in mind. But bottom line, and I'll stop there, I still want to see the games. The games are how we will judge the output of Blizzard. And we haven't seen them for a long time. And the fact that we haven't seen them, I take as a good sign, cautiously optimistic for the quality of the games. Everything else, the company policy, the rampant capitalism is another discussion. But for the games, I'm still waiting. You know, it's wait and see. So all right, that was Activision Blizzard. Of course, we are just a couple of weeks away from the release of the new consoles. And so we have news for consoles, definitely. There was a teardown of the PlayStation 5 in the beginning of the month, and I think that's a good place to start the discussion about the PlayStation 5 in general. The teardown itself, probably not the most interesting thing. The console is definitely massive, has a huge fan, and will stay cool. We're going to get reviews from reviewers and journalists who have been getting their review units and posting them on Twitter, making everyone jealous for a few days. But yeah, the console itself is really big and hopefully will stay cool and silent. That is the goal that everyone's hoping. There's interesting liquid metal for the cooling of the CPU, which is an interesting thing. Also, there's, this was already known, but maybe you don't know that, there is an extra NVMe SSD port on the console, so you can add storage easily to the console. So I expect they are going to be out of stock of those on every site fairly soon after the release of the console itself. But you don't need to swap the SSD. You can just add storage for if you have the specific specs for that drive that you are going to buy to extend the storage of the console. So that's pretty cool. The other big piece of news we got from the PlayStation 5 is the backwards compatibility discussion. And we finally got the confirmation that, yes, all of the games, like there's a list of 10 minor-ish games that are not backwards compatible from PS4, but all of the other ones are going to be backwards compatible. So that's confirmed. You get backwards compatibility for PlayStation 4 games on PlayStation 5. Hardware is a tiny little bit more complicated, but it doesn't really matter at this point. The important thing is that you get the games, and we got that confirmation. We also had the UI that was revealed, and that I think was a lot more interesting. There were three elements. There was like a 15-minute video going through all of the UI, but what I took away from it were three really interesting and unexpected elements of the UI that actually might change the way we approach games on PlayStation 5. The first one is, so there's a UI element that's called cards, which are just, you know, different cards that appear on the screen when you press the PlayStation button, and those cards have different things in them. One of them is activities. And activities are a certain, well, activity that you can do in-game that is detailed in one of the cards that is displayed on the interface of the PlayStation 5. And so you would have, for example, a level where you have different things you can do in a game. You can finish the level. That's one activity. You know, go beat the boss at the end or reach the goal at the end. You have things that you can collect, for example, in that level. And the activity card will tell you which activities are available and the completion amount that you have done already, and a best guess, a best estimate of how long you have to, you would need to complete that activity. And that is something that speaks to me very much, because as an avid gamer that is also a parent and, you know, older and doesn't have as much time as I did when I was a little bit younger, I really appreciate the idea that I can slight detour. SSD is awesome for this too, because you launch, you turn on the console, you launch into the game very quickly. And that's been the case on the Wii U for a while, but even more so now with the next-gen consoles. It applies to previous-gen games also. And that is awesome because I think it won't be as fast as games that are designed for the PlayStation 5, but it does mean that you get, of course, more frame rate and resolution, but also more quickly get into your games. And that is enough of a change for me that I will definitely prefer playing my games from the previous generation on the next generation, like significantly, not just, oh, I have just a little something. Like, it's different from the previous generations where the change between the two gens was not that massive that you wouldn't feel a desire to get the new generation to play games from the previous generation. I think here it's more significant. Obviously, I'd love to have, you know, tons of games designed for the new generation, and I think they're lacking this time around. But it is definitely more compelling than it was before to play previous generation games on the new generation. So that aside, the activities thing I think is really cool because they will give you a clear path. If you have 10 minutes, okay, go do that thing. You'll have fun and it will be, you can complete something. I think that is really cool. And also with the SSD, you can jump to that activity. They showed the example with Sackboy, A Big Adventure. They will warp you to that activity from the UI, and it will take a couple of seconds to get to that activity. So again, no waiting time to go do the things you want to do. I really like that. The other element is the game help feature, which is a little bit more controversial, I think, but I really like as well. Essentially, you can get help for the game that you're playing within the game itself. And that works with different levels of tips. Like if you're, again, the example they gave was in a level you have to collect stuff. And they could tell you first level is, hey, it's near the beginning of the level. So you go and you search. Second one is, look at this element in the level, pay attention to that, and then you'll look at it more specifically. And then the last one would be an actual video showing you where it is. And I think there's a valid argument that says, but this sucks because I don't want to know. I want to discover things by myself. And if this becomes a standard, then you are robbed of the joy and pleasure of discovering all of those things. And I think that's a valid, argument to an extent, but there are two things there. First, it's in the hands of the developers. Developers need to implement this, and hopefully when they don't, they will implement it in a way that makes sense with the game they're designing. So that's important. And the other thing is, I really think that we already have those things because we all have phones in our pockets and we go to YouTube and Google to find tips about the places we're stuck in the games all the time anyway, right? We go to walkthroughs, we go to YouTube videos that are spoilery. Oh, they do a good job, by the way, in the UI warning you if there's a potential spoiler in all of those things. But so it's already available. It's just PlayStation and Sony are integrating it into the UI of the console, which I think is a good idea. It just removes friction and makes things easier for the player. And if you don't, I understand you don't have to use it if you don't want to. Some people will be more drawn to it and it might change their gaming experience, but I think overall it's a positive. And the last thing is the picture-in-picture friend streaming, which I think is a pretty cool feature if you have friends, which I don't necessarily, I never have time, to play with friends at the time that they're available to play because, family life. But if you do, it's not just chatting anymore. You can have picture-in-picture or, side-by-side streaming of what they're playing. And you might be playing the same game or you might be playing a different game and just chat. And it might feel like you're more together, like sitting on a couch like we used to. if you have that visual representation of what they're, not representation, but that visual element of what they're doing, I think it could be pretty cool for not just co-op playing, but just together playing. So I really like that that element. So those are the main ones. There's another one I just want to mention briefly. You'll be able to record conversations, voice conversations, and send them for moderation, which recording conversations could be used for ill, I'm sure. But voice chat is such a cesspool for harassment and toxicity that I think it's just like you can see chat and you can record chat, like text chat in other games. It makes sense that you could record voice chat and send it to Sony for actionable, you know, actions against people who are being offensive. So I really think this is a good thing. I think that's it on the PlayStation 5 front. It's only fair that we talk a little bit about Microsoft and the Xbox as well. There were a number of little reviews, like the console is very much quiet as the, you know, as we could expect. It's both the X and S seem to be very much quiet consoles, and that's going to be great as well because, well, I mean, the One X was also very quiet. But those things aside, we got impressions from reviewers and stuff like that on the hardware and on the backwards compatibility. And all of that is basically what you would expect. Drinking a little bit. But the really important piece of news for Microsoft is we discussed last episode the fact that Amazon Luna's streaming service, game streaming service, is available on iOS via a web app, not an app from the App Store. And the important thing here is that Phil Spencer confirmed with employees that the Game Pass and, you know, xCloud, the streaming service, will be available on iOS and iPadOS in 2021 via a browser app. And so essentially what I was saying last time, I would expect, and it doesn't take a genius to expect that, but we would expect that that would be available for iOS, for Microsoft's Game Pass, and for Stadia, and, well, other solutions as well. And that is the confirmation. This is really important because the way that these services work is they put games everywhere, and if they're not available on those devices, it's a big chunk of gamers and players that will not have access to them. So I think it's really important. Another aspect of the Game Pass, and especially on mobile, is that Microsoft is expanding the touch controls on games. They designed touch controls specifically for different games. They have 10-ish now that have touch controls, which obviously the controller is going to be the best option for using a xCloud, you know, the Game Pass on your mobile. But if you don't have one, then you can still do it with touch controls. And if the touch controls are designed specifically for your device, that is really cool, I feel. Since we're talking about game streaming, I guess that's a good time to mention that Facebook is getting into that game as well. It's only a test in the US as usual, in parts of the US for now, but it is available on the Android and the web on computers. And there aren't a lot of games yet. It's really a testing period for now. It's not on iOS, as you would expect, because of, you know, essentially they were saying Apple sucks, but unsurprisingly. But yeah, it's cloud streaming is everywhere, including Facebook. I'm fond of saying that the only companies that can do cloud streaming are Google, Microsoft, Amazon and Facebook, because they have the server infrastructure throughout the world. Arguably, Apple could do it too. I don't know their server status, but they have been beefing it up for a good while now, and they have their banking on services as well a lot, and they need servers everywhere. So I don't know if they use, you know, AWS and Microsoft servers, or if they have their own. But regardless, the four companies that definitely can are now doing various stages of testing or releasing of cloud gaming. So definitely a big, big thing happening now with cloud gaming. And Facebook is starting small with smaller games, but, you know, there's no, that's the beauty of cloud gaming. There's nothing that says you can't make bigger games. You just need to have the server capacity in the back. And the clients, the consumers, don't need anything. And if you can stream a AAA level game, then it doesn't matter if you, essentially, it doesn't matter if you stream a tiny little Flash game or a super powerful, mega PC-based game. And it seems Facebook is starting with mobile-ish games, but, you know, they are flexible and they can do whatever they want, essentially. So what that means is Facebook is joining gaming in a bigger way than it has before. Gaming has always been big on Facebook, of course, but this is like joining everyone else. Now, we should be a little bit careful about big tech companies joining gaming, because this has not been going super well for many of them. The latest example is Amazon canceling Crucible, which was a multiplayer game that came out a few months ago. And it was so badly received when it came out in July that they pulled it back into beta. And I think it came out a bit before July, and they pulled it back in beta in July. And they said, oh, we're going to work on it, it's going to be great. And now they canceled it. Like, this is the most bizarre thing that has happened for a game in a very long time. And this is not Amazon's first first example of this. What was the name of the other game? Breakaway? I can't remember. But they had another esports-focused title that came out a couple of years ago. It wasn't bad, but it didn't take, and they just canceled it after a few months, or a few weeks even. This is the second time this has happened in a much more dramatic way, because they said they were going to keep it in beta, etc., etc. I am flabbergasted by this, and it shows something that I have been saying for a while, which is, tech people think that gaming is the same as tech. You know, tech journalists think they understand gaming, because it's true that it's close, you know, it's similar-ish industries. But there are enough differences that if you look at gaming through the lens of tech and through what you know in tech, you're going to make very wrong assumptions and analysis and predictions. And tech journalists do that all the time. A lot of them were saying, oh, Nintendo should stop making consoles, or, oh, where everything is going to be on mobile now. You don't need a dedicated console or a mobile console. Like, there was definitely a space for a mobile console, and Nintendo took advantage of that in a very clever hybrid way. But essentially, tech people don't seem to understand gaming. And with Amazon doing this a second time with a big game they were banking on, I feel an example of that. And I don't know how this is possible that they are messing it up so much. Maybe it could be a good thing that they are not, beating a dead horse with this game that is not going to work out. But it's kind of a slim chance that this is just a good thing. It's good maybe that they're canceling it, but how did they get there? I don't know what's happening at Amazon, but I'm guessing they are looking at this and saying, okay, we have to change the way we do things. And by the way, they have another game in development called New World, a big MMO, and I'm worried about that one now. I mean, I wasn't super enthusiastic before, but yeah, it's I feel it's worrisome. So yeah. We'll see what happens there. Stadia is another example of a big tech company messing things up spectacularly, I feel. And it kind of continues because with their big coming out party, essentially they made three games available as demos that are available for anyone that has a Gmail account. There are no issues of you need to purchase the thing or be subscribed to the service with the pro subscription or anything like that. Anyone for about a week, I think the week is over-ish now, or maybe there are still a few days, but you can go to stadia.com and just start playing one of a pretty highly anticipated game, Immortals Fenyx Rising, which is a Ubisoft game initially known as Gods and Monsters, that is a pretty cool thing. There are a couple of other games that I don't feel require a lot of discussion, but that one is pretty cool and people are curious about it. And being able to try it for free easily in your browser, Chrome or, you know, any Chromium browser, is awesome. I think this is really, really, really cool. And no one has heard about it. Like, this should be a coming out party for Stadia. And the thing itself is awesome and it works really well, but I don't understand why they didn't make a little bit more noise about it. It's like to get people to discover the service. But anyway, it's it is cool. You can go give it a try and you will have fun, I think. And it's at stadia.com. If you connect a controller to your computer, then you can control it that way, but you don't need to. You can just do it. You know, that's the magic of cloud streaming. You just need a computer. Any computer will work, will do. Go to stadia.com right now, and you can be playing it in 15 seconds, literally. That is insane, and they're not... Anyway. All right. Well, what else is there? I think the streaming portion of the discussion is pretty much done. There's a new selection of Ryzen CPUs from AMD, which is pretty interesting, pretty cool. Essentially, they're saying that now they are not just competing on bang for the buck, but actually being the best choice for gamers specifically. The Ryzen 5000 series CPUs are much cheaper than the equivalent power at Intel. And of course, Zen 3 architecture has been proving to be, is estimated to be a really significant upgrade. And so we'll see what happens there. I should have waited another day to do this episode because AMD is also going to announce their GPUs tomorrow. But, you know, I feel like we kind of know what's going to happen. They're going to be awesome GPUs and they're going to work really well with Ryzen CPUs because it's the same manufacturer. At least that's what they're promising. And it's going to be even more difficult to decide which one to buy between that and NVIDIA's GTX 3000 series. So we'll see what happens there. But essentially, it feels like if you want to upgrade your PC, we're at one of those moments in, like, there's always something cooler coming in the PC world. There's always something cooler coming. So it's always like, oh, should I wait for it? Should I upgrade now? It's always a difficult choice. Now, there is essentially one of those moments where you definitely want to upgrade because it is a significant deal, either in power gain or price or both. And of course, if you just, you know, bought a new PC a year ago, then maybe you shouldn't. But if you have, like, let's say a three-year-old computer or older, it might be a good time to upgrade if you feel like you need to. For me, who has a six-year-old computer, I definitely want to upgrade, so I'll be looking into that. The last thing I want to cover, the big element, is Chinese games, and one of them among more than most, Genshin Impact, which has been making a lot of noise. Well, actually, the one that has been making most noise is Hades, which I have been loving for months, and I'm very happy that the entire world seems to be discovering. This is really cool. Hades is an awesome game, and I'm sure you've heard about it. And if you haven't, like, just go download it now. It's relatively cheap, and it's really great. I'm sure you've heard about it, so I won't spend too much time talking about it again here. But one of the best roguelites that has ever been made. Incredible storytelling within the confines of the roguelite genre in a way that is groundbreaking for that kind of game. And insanely fun gameplay. It is a treasure. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be a game of the year for many, many people at the end of this year. Or at least on that list, which is interesting because it can run on anything. Currently it's on PC and Switch, but so it can run on anything in a moment when next gen consoles are coming. It's really funny that Hades is capturing the zeitgeist. But getting back to Genshin Impact, if you don't know what it is a Chinese game available on mobile, PC, and PlayStation 4, I believe. And it is a MMO, open world MMO that is heavily inspired by Breath of the Wild, The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, heavily inspired, but also has many of the trappings of mobile games, especially from Asia, with gacha mechanics. If you don't know what gacha are, they're essentially loot boxes. So you pay to get some game elements. They can be weapons or characters or stuff like that. And they have different rarities. And you can get them you can combine them to make them stronger if you get multiple of them. That is a staple of the gacha genre. And in the worst examples, it is really a money sink. And it's designed for that, for whales, and it is extremely unpleasant as a business model. In the case of Genshin Impact, it seems to be fairly well balanced for that type of game. You get a lot of free content. You get a lot of fun out of it, and you don't really need to pay for anything. Maybe after a few dozen hours of game time, you start to have to pay for stuff. But even then, most people are saying this is probably amongst the best examples of player respect in that kind of genre. So it's been very successful. And beyond that, I think what is really interesting is that it's kind of the spearhead of two things. First of all, this success cannot be ignored, and I suspect that we're going to see more traditionally mobile developers coming to the console and PC market. I think they're going to port that style. Not that, free-to-play games are rare on those platforms, but specifically the Asian mobile type of free-to-play, I think we're going to see more and more of those in the future. So that's the first trend. The second trend is Chinese games. This is, I feel this generation of consoles is going to be the one where we see the Chinese games come to the West. And we have seen, many different games, or at least I would say three. There's Xuanxuan Sword 7, which is coming to PS4 and PC and might come. It's a venerable RPG in China. I suspect it will come to next gen at some point. But the other one, I can't remember the name, but it's one based on the Monkey King story, which is very well known mostly because of Dragon Ball in the West. But this is essentially Chinese developers that are coming to traditional consoles and PC for us. I really think this is going to be happening now. It is you know, I think it's a little bit of a concern for the business models that are popular in those regions because of the prevalence of mobile games. And that, you know, it worries me a little bit. But at the same time, I'm very excited to get Chinese culture in the gaming space and kind of seeing a different take on all of those tropes maybe that we've been playing for a long time. Of course, there might be a concern about censorship and the way the Chinese government is influencing the way the games are made and all of that. But, you know, that's a whole different conversation. What I choose to look at for now is we're going to see Chinese culture in gaming. And I think that is pretty cool. And it could even open some avenues for, you know, more understanding and all of that. Certainly, Japanese culture has been, through anime and gaming, very much integrated into Western culture, or at least a lot of Westerners have been made familiar with this. And as a Westerner that has fallen in love with Japan initially through gaming and anime and manga, I certainly feel that. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how that evolves. And I guess that's about it. I could say I could talk a little bit about Baldur's Gate 3, which is the big, you know, release for CRPG fans. But it's an early access game, and by all accounts, it's pretty awesome. But I think I'll conclude with this is the last episode before the new generation is out, and this is so exciting. I'm genuinely, you know, this is something that obviously only happens every few years. And in a world where things are not so cool sometimes, I feel like this is going to be a breath of fresh air and a little bit of escapism. And it doesn't really matter that, you know, are the games different? Are they better? It's a reason to get excited. So I welcome that reason, and it's only 2 weeks away. I am so, like, I'm gonna go to the store to get my Xbox on the 10th. I will see if I can get a PlayStation 5 or not. Again, if you have one that is, you know, a pre-order that you don't need, I'm very happy to take it off your hands. So patrick@frenchspin.com, send me an email. It's just super exciting, and I can't wait for games like Assassin's Creed Valhalla and Cyberpunk, which are mere weeks away. Not too excited about Watch Dogs Legion. That's not my thing. But all of those games, and there are even wild cards like Godfall on PlayStation 5, a bunch of other things that are coming out on Game Pass, like Tetris Effect Connected, which I didn't get on PlayStation 4, and since it's in Game Pass, I'm going to definitely give it a try on Xbox Series X. There are a couple of other games there on Game Pass that I'm excited to try. So I am very excited about all this, and I hope you are as well. And we'll talk about it, I guess, in about a month, and to see how things went. And I'm sure they're going to go very well, and everything is going to be awesome, right? Everything is awesome. That's the motto from now on. Thank you very much for listening. I am Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, everywhere, essentially. You can also find notpatrick.com, where you have all the links to everything I do, including the Phileas Club, which is a show about international news, where we talk about stuff from different perspectives and listen to each other. That's a really cool show. You might enjoy it. And let me know if you have a PS5 you don't need, pre-order, and I will talk to you in about a month. Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.